But if you use the
I'm going to call the meeting to order, and those sergeants armed are more, those are disorderly. Okay, I call the meeting to order at 5:30, September the 10th, 2024. Start off with roll call.
Chairman Ron Sweat.
Present.
Hugh John Anderson.
Nope.
Brian Anderson. Brian Anderson. He is joining virtually. Willie Blake?
Yeah, here.
Thank you. Frank Flash? Frank Flash? Nicole Fife?
Here.
Here.
Thank you. Kathy Krushberg?
You're mute, Kathy.
She said you can't unmute herself, but we see her. We visually confirm her attendance.
Yes, thank you. Okay, Kendall Croson?
Here.
Thank you. Jose Munoz. He was going to join virtual. Krista Romero Cardenas.
Present.
Thank you. Lisa Vega.
Present.
We may proceed.
We have a quorum?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Probably everybody knows everybody else in the room, but just I think since there may be those may not know the commission on a basis of being commissioners, I'd like each of the commissioners just to sort of introduce themselves and their interest in Parks and Connected Bond Oversight Commission, just so the audience can understand interest. I'll just go first. Ron Spark, Ward 6 representative. My interest is in park and connectivity equity and the social consequences of that. Tucson has approximately a third of its park acreage compared to all the United States cities. We don't even rank in the top 100. So that one of the things with this effort that we have is to try to correct some of that. Next.
Get away, Lisa. Hello. My name is Lisa Vega, Ward 1. My interest is in making these unsafe streets safe for cyclists, walkers, families with kids and strollers. And there's just so much fast-moving cars that are not respecting the law of the road, let alone the cyclists, the walkers. We got a high rate in deaths among pedestrians and cyclists, and I want to see all these great programs implemented and in any way I can help. That's my interest.
Thank you, Lisa. Hi, everyone. My name is Krista Romero Cardenas. Also vice chair for the committee and appointed by city planner. And my interest lies in my background. I'm a public health professional. And when I first joined, I was very interested in how we are green as we grow, right? I'm currently back in school and I'm studying climatology and climate change and seeing what we can do to make sure that we're building our community and our city the best we can because changes are happening. And so we've been able to do a lot of good work here. And thank you to staff and everyone that's here. Thank you.
And I'm Willie Blake, and I represent Ward 5. And I guess I've been doing this probably over 10 or 11 years. But my work is on the south side, and I'm a family-minded person. I like to see families get out of the house and, you know, have a good time. And the main thing I worked on was a Willie Blake Park. And then across the way, there's a shopping center. And I'm the one who started the marketplace. And it's a good place for a family to shop. You know, before they had a long ways to go. Now it's right close by. And I also do the grant proposal for the county. And just an old man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. John Anderson, I'm a landscape architect, and I certainly agree with all the sentiments expressed previously. I'm interested in the city becoming a better place for everybody.
I'm Kendall Crozen. I worked for the Tucson Audubon Society for 15 years and Mission Garden for 7 years, recently retired from that. I was on the Parks and Rec Commission for 8 years, advocating for sustainability, natural open space, wildlife habitat, and good access to it in Tucson parks.
Thank you. Kathy, I guess we can't hear you, huh? Okay.
Hi, Nicole Fife. I was appointed by the city manager to represent the board, and I, first of all, I want to thank Willie Blake for everything he does, but also really interested in high-quality parks for our kids and families, safe streets for pedestrians and bikes and cars. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, I think we've introduced...
Ryan.
Ryan.
Hi, Brian Anderson. Oh, there's a little echo there. But I'll carry on. I used to work for Mayor Rothschild as his transportation and policy planning advisor. I had the pleasure of working with TDOT, as it was named at the time, to secure initial funding for the bike share program. I'm an avid cyclist myself. I bike around the town pretty much on a daily. I currently work at DEP as a manager of business development, but I joined this commission representing Ward 3 currently because I am a major advocate for making sure that we have safe infrastructure for pedestrians and bicyclists. When you visit other cities and towns of our same size, you see much more robust infrastructure, ensuring that folks have multimodal transportation options. So that's why I am passionate about serving on this commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, Kathy, can you?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, wonderful.
Figured it out. My name is Kathy Kachmer, and I'm actually representing the city manager's office in advocacy for the seniors of our community. I'm also part of the Adaptive Recreation, patrons of the Adaptive Recreation, who support any physical needs throughout our community, whether they are long-term or just temporary, like I am now, because I had knee surgery this morning. But I'm here, and I'm listening.
Thanks for your participation, commissioners. We realize there's a other distracting national event occurring, but you all felt it was important to fulfill your civic responsibilities as citizens volunteers. We have some very important decisions to make just by the number of communications we've had. And I know you gave up that opportunity to indulge yourself in another arena. My own personal story is this is actually my 58th wedding anniversary. And I'm still in love with the same woman.
Beautiful.
And we haven't killed each other yet. Okay. Poll of the audience. I'm not going to read this, but basically... We really have usually restrict the poll to about 3 minutes, but and limit the session to 15 minutes. But I think we'll have some flexibility here tonight. We do have one member to address us. A couple other remarks. Poll the audience is open as far as topical material. However, we can only deal with those comments that have to do with agenda items in this meeting. There are some topics that are not on the agenda, and they can be probably addressed partially by staff in interval or put on as an agenda item for our next meeting, which is end of October, I believe. So those are the ground rules. We, as a commission, really do welcome input from the community. We've gotten a number of emails as well. And this is probably our third meeting where we've had really good grassroots input on some of the questions before us. And I'm very thankful that the community is engaged in these as being meaningful to them. So I have only one card or call to the audience. Denise?
Yeah.
Aquino.
Aquino, yeah.
Thank you. Oh, and just like the Filipino president, El Presidente, huh?
Who I'm not related to. But otherwise, I'd be a part of a different government. But yeah, thank you.
Did you want to address the
question? Yeah. So just quick introduction. My name's Denise Aquino. My parents are from the Philippines, born and raised in New York, but a happy Tucson transplant for the last 14 months. I'm the new executive director at El Grupo Youth Cycling, and happy to be here, happy to do the good work. I will say I came here at Lisa Vega's invitation, and I'm happy to be here, happy to be involved. And just so folks know, we have 150 kids ages 7 to 17 biking the streets of Tucson, mostly in the neighborhoods around, you know, the 6th Avenue protected bike lane and our project. And we do our best. We deck them out in high-vis shirts, even more yellow than your shirt, John. We get bike lights so that way cars can see them. We do the best that we can to make sure they are visible to cars. But given that Tucson is, you know, the third highest in the country in pedestrian deaths, there's only so much that we can do. And so I'm here to represent our youth, not just El Grupo's youth, but our youth, so that the commission and the project can be approved. So that way we're doing everything that we can on our side of the street, and we hope that anything that can be done on your side of the street is done as well. So thank you for the time. And love the shirt, John, and thanks for listening.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. It's always welcome to see our future at the table. Okay. So we had a number of emails. I'm going to just comment. Do we have anybody online here?
Sorry. I think online.
Do we have somebody else online?
We have Melanie, who has her hand up.
Oh, okay. Yes, introduce yourself. Please.
Hi, hello. This is the first time I've attended one of these. My name is Melanie Stedman. I'm just a concerned and involved citizen. Actually, my husband, Eric Wilson, wish he could have been here. He was the one to tip me off that this was happening, but he's in the service industry, so he's working on 4th Avenue right now. And I just wanted to relay our sentiments about what we've been learning about the 6th Avenue protected bike lane efforts, that project. I guess to speak a little personally and why this is important to us, my husband, he relies solely on his bike to get around town. Rain or shine, doesn't matter what the season is. He bikes to work. He loves taking advantage of the loop. We're over on the west side in Barrio Hollywood. So we are often frequenting the businesses downtown on 6th Avenue, on 4th Avenue. I work at the university. And so smart infrastructure when it comes to how we get around town is really important to us. I take the bus to work, but I would love to bike. Personally, I'm not like my husband. I am actually a little terrified to bike alone in this city, mm-hmm. despite this image of Tucson being friendly to bike cyclists and people who use bikes. We actually met at the university 15 years ago, so I'm really familiar with Tucson, and we've lived here consecutively now for about 7 years, and we would just love to see better protections when it comes to bike lane and smarter infrastructure. We previously lived in D.C., and we loved biking around D.C., and a lot of that came around the fact that the infrastructure there is very friendly to the professionals and the citizens, just the actual community members who rely on biking and walking and taking the bus to work. So when it comes to this project, having faith that distracted or aggressive drivers won't cross the painted line, I personally just don't have it, because I just see it happen. And I see the memorials for bicyclists who have been killed in the city. And as a data analyst myself, I keep on top of the stats as far as how safe it is here to be a pedestrian and to be a cyclist. So I just wanted to share our experience here and the fact that we would just love to see the culture shift and just more projects that are actually prioritizing physical barriers and protections on these bike lanes that are just more than paint lines or, yeah, I'll end it there. But thank you for your time and thank you for the work and commitment that you have to making the streets safer here. We're both looking forward to being more involved. So, again, thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, especially your sobering comments. We have to be aware of the gravity of what we do here, that we make a difference as far as not only the quality of life, but the morbidity of life here in Tucson. So thank you again for stepping forward and making those comments. Okay, we will now move to...
I believe we have one more speaker.
I believe.
Yeah, but she put in the chat that she can't unmute or turn on her camera.
Okay, can we look at the chat?
We have the chat open.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else?
Call the call-in number to try and see if we can get audio with her that way. If you can hear us, Suzanne, and you can call the call-in number that's in the meeting invitation.
She said she could. Okay.
Suzanne's trying to call in, but she can't. Suzanne Schaefer's trying to call in, but she...
I can't hear and I can't see, Ron. What would you like me to do?
We're waiting for someone to call in, that's all. That's why we're quiet. Just catching you up.
Okay. I mean, I came on a bus, but with one eye. It was pretty hard to do.
You made it.
Okay. I'm late. I'm sorry.
You made it. I don't know how to get the mouse over to the side to see the other people. That
I think we have another hand in the meantime.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Hold on. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Should we go on to other
Can I be heard? Am I called in?
I hear you.
I can hear you too. Okay. This is Suzanne. I'm sorry. I'm just wanting to verify that I'm okay. Thank you, folks, for your feedback. Okay. Well, now that I'm sort of shook up by this whole thing, and I'm glad that Richard got there, because I was going to mention that he was trying to get there and having transit difficulties and impaired pedestrian difficulties. So it's all in the mix. So I live on North 3rd Avenue between 4th and 5th Streets, and most days I find myself either biking north-south on 6th Avenue or crossing it east-west on foot or bike or doing both. Before Sunlink and before Downtown Links, I would often choose a different route in and out of downtown because there were other bikeable and walkable options that really better suited my needs a lot of the time. But the streetcar and the developments at 4th and Toole have impeded bike travel on 4th Avenue badly. Downtown Links has now cut off access via 7th Avenue and 9th Avenue that we used to have. And for this reason, 6th Avenue must be a comfortable place to bicycle, and it's not. So we who live here and use non-car travel modes have been pleading for many years for enhanced safety and a more inviting atmosphere for cyclists and people walking or rolling along Sixth Avenue and crossing it. Car traffic must be slower and must give bikes and peds due respect and space. It must be made abundantly clear that bikes belong. I'm not a road design specialist, but I've been told many times over the past decade when we've asked about what our transportation department can do to mitigate the dangers of this section of Sixth Avenue, that Prop 407 is the answer. And if we can patiently wait for that funding to come through, a road diet is in the works. So Tucson delivers. Don't renege on this promise. I want to say one more thing about Sixth Avenue, because as we do whatever we do, we have to figure out a way to prevent cars from deciding that they need to go into the underpass before a bicycle, even if they're already on the downslope and they decide to go into the oncoming travel lane and cut in front of a bike. It's probably about the scariest thing that happens to me on a bike. And it happens about once a month. So that's my comment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. It's good to have you comment on your real life experience with Sixth Avenue and what's happened to cut off all the formerly good north-south access points to downtown to the northern parts. Do we have someone else?
Logan.
Logan. Logan, please introduce yourself.
Hello, y'all.
Hello.
My name is Logan Phillips.
My name is Logan. Oh, I thought you were talking about me. Never mind. I'll jump out. Sorry, that was not me.
Two Logans in the chat. my name is Logan Phillips. I'm a downtown resident and a member of a single car family. I have a cargo e-bike that I take our two kids to school on and pick them up on most days. I want to echo the importance of fully protected bike lanes. Paint does not make me feel any more safe when I'm riding my bike in the bike lane, especially with kids on the back. And really the point about north-south access through downtown is very important. It's getting harder and harder to ride a bike through that area, and this is not the direction I want to see my city go in. When I voted on the proposition to provide more funding for parks and connectivity, it was specifically around the promises of protected bike lanes that got me most excited about supporting that that bond, and also, you know, the my taxpayer money that goes to that. And so for those reasons, when I'm thinking about the promises that were made by the city and my day-to-day experience of using this infrastructure, I really want to see those promises be kept. And we should be building bike lanes that that are as safe as possible, and so that more and more residents will feel safe to use them. And that way we can reduce traffic and make our city more sustainable. So thank you for thinking of kids, and thank you to the folks who do the work with El Grupo. My kid did El Grupo this summer, and I have to be honest, it was a pretty terrifying experience thinking about my kid out there with a bunch of other kids biking. When I'm know from experience that when I'm looking at oncoming drivers, you know, how many of them are looking at their laps or looking at their phones as they're driving. And for this reason, protected bike lanes are very needed. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Richard Mayers, you want to address the commission?
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to somewhat echo what Suzanne said. I mean, Fourth Avenue got taken away from us by the streetcar. Fifth got blocked by the district, so there's no continuous north-south. Seventh is gone until Lynx is done, and Lynx is a year out, I think, now. I mean, it's just stretching longer and longer. Ninth is gone. There are no grade crosses into downtown at all now for bikes and peds. Sixth Avenue is the only viable route. I live in West University, and I understand that my neighborhood has issues with some of the design elements, but doing something is way better than doing nothing. I mean, I've fallen on the streetcar tracks twice. I have a broken hip, and I've had a dislocated shoulder on the street tracks. I'm a good rider, and I never fall except for on the street tracks. It's because it's the streetcar tracks. It's because of the cars and the streetcar and the rails being so close. But And that's why a safe route into downtown is so important. And it's also a continuous route because it goes further south for a long way. And the south parts are being put together better and better. And it goes really far north. It stops at Prince. It's not far enough for me, but I'll go sideways. And I'm disturbed that it's taking as long as it has taken to even move out of planning into construction. Because every day that goes by is a day of my life that I don't have to ride a bike on a safe street. And I don't care if it's a separated bike path that has a curb. In fact, I don't like curb bike lanes. I really don't like Maine. I hit those stupid hedgehogs going down Maine. The ones that are remaining, because they've all been destroyed by cars on purpose.
That's right.
I just want a space that's in a road where the cars are willing to go slower, and I think the narrowed road's going to solve that, where cars aren't supposed to be and doors don't open in my face. That's all I need to ride. And I'll say this too. I don't think the people who need a protected lane are wrong. They're just not me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Yes. You'd like to speak?
I didn't fill out a card. I didn't.
Okay. Please introduce yourself. Or...
Hi there. My name's Betsy Larson. I'm a resident on 6th Avenue. So my house is right in the middle of this proposed. I think the only thing I wanted to express to the committee today is that when you're formulating the language, I think it would be helpful to keep some flexibility so that the residents on 6th Avenue have some, a little bit of say of how our parking situation is handled. So one of the challenges we face is it is illegal zoning wise for us to park in our front yards. So that means my only parking space is in front of my house on the street. And I have two under the age of 9 now. So I've raised two babies. I've taught two babies how to bike on 6th Avenue. But I also have a 93-year-old grandmother who lives at home. And getting her from the house to the car is an essential part of my day. And as it's been presented to us over the past couple of years, the designs have been very... kind of, you know, written in cement, like they've been very adverse towards people with mobility issues, sight issues, balance issues. And when I see a lot of the designs being presented to us, all I see is a broken hip or my child running out into the bike lane and getting hit by a bike trying to get to the van. Because they're, you know, a 3-year-old's not going to stop and pay attention and look both ways at a, you know, it's, there's a lot of complex issues along 6th Avenue, trash, debris, water flow. We have a lot of trees with a lot of mesquite beans. I mean, there's just a lot of complicated things on 6th Avenue, trash pickup, that I think are challenges. But I think we can come to an agreement. I'm hoping that the language stays flexible enough for us to be able to work together with the city and, you know, find a design that works for everybody. So, because I, for one, and I think the neighborhood too, we all understand and really do love the idea of a protected bike lane. It's just how is that protection going to come about? And then we need to make sure it works for the residents that have no other options for parking along 6th Avenue. So, thank you guys.
Thank you. Very much appreciated. We're finally, we will close the poll of the audience. I'd like to, we have to jump back. But this has been very meaningful, I think, to the commissioners to have people that are daily affected by the design or proposed design on 6th Avenue. That was very fine. Okay, I will jump back and go to the approval of the minutes. They were sent out virtually. Is there any comments or changes on them? I thought they were really excellent. If you're prejudiced, any other comments on the minutes?
Do you have any changes?
I wasn't here. Minutes? I noticed that a lot of actions, there was no action taken, but we did have enough for quorum. I was unable to attend last session. Is that something we'll be following up on, not this session, but in October, for those where there was no action taken?
The ones, as I recall, the ones that needed action, there was a vote, roll call vote.
Understood.
Ones that were just for information, for future items, that there was no action needed to be taken.
Thank you, right. Dr. Smith.
The way we expressed that.
Thank you.
But thank you. It's a critical. John?
If there is no other question, we can move on. I'd like to make a motion to accept the minutes from last meeting.
Second. Okay. Do we need a roll call on the minutes? I don't think so. No. Okay. All right. Good. We will now move to the two, I guess, major items on our agenda. And we will present for staff on 6th Avenue Protected
Land. We're moving on to the next item, Dr. Spark. I didn't hear a vote on that last item. I don't think you need a roll call, but I still think you need to do a voice vote.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry.
All those in favor of the acceptance of the minutes for the July 15th meeting, say aye.
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 Okay. Aye. Great. Yeah. Yeah. Different. Thank you. Different boards and commissions, whether it actually need a voice approval of the vote. And in fact, even with the approval, somebody at the next meeting could object to the minutes and bring it back to the table to change it. So that's another option. Okay, who on staff is going to lead us through 6th Avenue bike lane design?
Mr. Chair, we've got Colin Cheston attending virtually this evening. I think he's got a presentation he'd like to run through. Colin was feeling a little under the weather, so that's why he's attending virtually. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Sam Creedy. I'm the Director of Transportation and Mobility. With me is Andy Bemis, Deputy Director, and then Colin Cheston is our Project Manager, which I think most of you are familiar with Colin. He's been here before. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Colin to run through the presentation.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen just so I can advance the slides, if that's okay. All right. Can y'all see that? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
I'm excited to be here to share some information about the 6th Ave bike lane project that we have through Prop 407. This was a request after our last meeting. Jim Glock, former director of transportation, showed up for the call to the audience last time, who happens to live in West University. And as a follow-up, the commission requested that we have a little bit more information on this project, because I don't think the commission has had an opportunity to share or to hear more about kind of what we've been up to. So that's what I'm here to do tonight. And before I go over the project context too, I'll just share that this is a project we've actually been working on for several years. We started in 2021, starting to look at some options and doing some public outreach. So it's something that we've been thinking about for some time. And the goal tonight is to get direction from the commission on how to proceed. So this project is on 6th Avenue. It's from Speedway on the north end to 7th Street on the southern end. The posted speed limit is 30 miles an hour, although the speed limit or the existing speeds, the observed speeds are higher than 30 in most cases. The 85th percentile speeds are actually 36 miles an hour. And what that means is that 85% of the cars traveling on the street are traveling 36 miles an hour or less. There's about 5,000 to 6,000 cars per day for the non-traffic engineers in the room. Just to give you some context for what that means, on a neighborhood street, you would expect to see somewhere in the realm of like 500 to 2,500 cars a day. And then on a major street like Stone or Speedway, you'd expect to see somewhere in the neighborhood of 30,000 cars a day. So that just gives you a sense for, you know, how many cars are actually traveling down 6th Avenue. There is on-street parking, which is an important factor that plays into the design options that we've looked at. And there are a number of both residential and commercial curb cuts for driveways. I wanted to start with this because this is national design guidance that we use to select a bicycle facility type based on the roadway context. And this is coming from NACTA, which is the National Association of City Transportation Officials. It's a little bit of a technical chart, but basically everything in the gray is the roadway context. And then what's shown in the blue cells is the recommended bicycle facility for all ages and abilities. So, you know, this is something that the industry has been moving towards for some time now to try to make sure that we're designing bicycle facilities that meet the needs of the people who are using them, including, you know, little kids, older adults. And so this is guidance that we use frequently in order to inform our facility type selection. I've highlighted in red the context of Sixth Avenue. And what you can see is that the design guidance is protected bike lane or to reduce the speeds. And when it says reduce speeds, that means vehicle speeds, because that's one of the main factors that contributes to bicyclist's sense of comfort. This is a similar document that I'm pulling from. This is the FHWA Bikeway Selection Guide. That is the Federal Highway Administration, is what FHWA stands for. And then I've placed a red dot here to show you what the conditions are like on Sixth Avenue. You can see it's kind of borderline. And to be honest, that's part of the reason why, you know, staff have looked at this in a lot of different ways and have been back and forth on it a little bit, hearing the residents' concerns and hearing concerns from folks that travel along the street and trying to square that with, well, what is the, you know, what does the guidance say that's available nationally? And you can see it's kind of right there on the edge. If people were traveling 30 miles an hour, as the, you know, posted speed suggests, it would be, you know, within that bike lane area of, you know, acceptability. But you can see it's in that darker blue, which the preferred facility type is a separated bike lane or a shared use path at the observed speeds that we've seen today. So just to refresh you on the voter materials and what the description of the project was for 407, we heard folks in the call to the audience talk about this. It was described as a curb-separated protected bike lane, which is a mouthful. But yeah, what that means is adding, you know, a physical vertical element between the bike lane and the travel lanes. We actually do think that at least for one section of the project, there does need to be a project change. I'll say at the staff level, I think we're open to these two different options. And it's part of the reason why we've been having such a difficult time deciding. The one exception is between 7th Street and 5th Street, which I'll show you what that looks like on a map here in a second. There's a couple of constraints that really are pushing us in the direction of having a double buffered bike lane. The two constraints are, one, parking loss for the businesses. We've gone down there and observed parking utilization rates. There's a lot of demand for parking, and we don't think that's a good situation for the businesses to lose on-street parking where there's limited off-street parking. So I just wanted to say that. And then the second concern with the curb-protected bike lane from 7th Street to 5th Street is there are stormwater concerns. And so we've got heavy flows of stormwater traveling down the street and east-west in such a way that it's going to be very difficult to have a continuous curb protection. And that actually applies to a few other areas of the project as well, where there's going to have to be intermittent curb or little gaps in the curbs so that stormwater can flow around those curbs and then go to the existing curbs on the side of the street, because that's the lowest point of the street and that's where the water will flow. So we know that those are constraints, and I just wanted to put that out so that the commission is clear on kind of what that means. Okay, so the two options that we want to discuss tonight. The first option is a mix of protected bike lanes and double buffered bike lanes. So between 5th Street and 7th Street, there would be a buffered bike lane. And then north of 7th Street, it would be protected bike lanes. And then the second option is double buffered bike lanes for the full corridor. I'm going to talk about each of these options in a little bit more detail. So this is option one. You'll see that the legend there shows the double buffered bike lane between 7th Street and 5th Street, and then a protected bike lane from 5th Street to Speedway. The dashed lines there on the street, that's the west side of the street, because north is to the right in this map. That's showing the possible addition of back-end angle parking, trying to be sensitive to some of the parking loss concerns from the West University Neighborhood Association. The street's wide enough, and we think we can do it in that area, and that would just add a little bit of additional parking capacity for folks that live on the street and don't have off-street parking. This is what the protected option would look like. So you can see the bike lane is next to the curb. Then there's a buffer area with a raised curb, shown here as intermittent for the stormwater concerns. Then there's a parking lane on the other side of the curb, and then one lane in each direction. And of course, we're able to accommodate this by removing that center left turn lane, which is there today. And that gives us the space for the bike lanes and the buffer area. And this is showing the buffered bike lane option. This leaves the existing curbside parking where it is along the curb. There's a 3-foot buffer in between the parking lane and the bike lane, and that's just so that a door can, if somebody's pulling out or stepping out of the driver's side of a vehicle, that the door doesn't swing open into the bike lane. And then there's between the travel lane and the bike lane, there's a second buffer, and that just gives a little bit of extra space so that cars aren't too close to the bicyclists. As I mentioned, we did look at the parking capacity. So this image here is showing the existing parking spaces that are available on street and then the proposed. And this would be with the parking and curb protected bike lane configuration. So basically what that means is we're losing a little bit more than 20 parking spaces along the corridor in total if we go with the protected bike lane with the back end angle parking. So you can see in gray are the existing and the proposed, and we did that on a block by block basis. And then below, you can see the observed parking utilization, which we went out and looked. There were a lot of parked vehicles in that commercial area. There were a good number of vehicles parked on the street on 6th Avenue between 5th Street and University, and then north of University, the rates of parking utilization drop off substantially. So the protected bike lanes, just to be very clear, these are some images to show what that looks like. And this is showing parking protected with a curb on the left side, just to illustrate what that would look like. And it does have a physical concrete barrier. Okay, so the second option would be doing what we've called enhanced buffered bike lanes or double buffered bike lanes throughout the whole corridor. And we think in this configuration, we could also do the back-end angle parking in that one section between First Street and University. And again, this is just an example of what that would look like. And then this is a Tucson real-life example of something that we did on East University. This is between Stone and 4th Avenue. And you can see there's the buffers on both sides of the bike lane. This street also, by the way, used to have a center left turn lane, just like 6th Avenue did. And this was the configuration that we ended up on. For the parking capacity, you'll see that if we go with a double buffered option, we're losing fewer parking spaces. So only about 3 parking spaces are lost compared to the about 20 in the curb protected option. I wanted to talk a little bit about the history of the outreach that we've done to date. One of these is not specifically related to this project, but I think informed our thinking in terms of how we were approaching it. And that's the University Boulevard pilot project. And so this is when we were working on the third university bike boulevard project. And we actually tested both of the different options that we're talking about today. So we physically marked on the street both options. One block had the parking protected option. One block had the double buffered bike lane. We did some outreach to the West University Neighborhood Association, and they told us that they were opposed to the parking protected option. And part of that was due to parking loss and the realization that we needed to actually take more parking than we did originally in order to achieve the site visibility for people on side streets. So that was one of the concerns. We got mixed feedback from people riding bikes on the street. We did some intercept surveys, and the results surprised us a little bit. About 55% of people riding bikes said they actually preferred the double buffer over the parking protection option. And about 45% said that they preferred the separated option. So we, in the end, we ended up converting that full corridor to the double buffered option, based on the analysis that we did about parking loss, the concerns we heard from the neighborhood association, and the intercept surveys that we did with the bicyclists. I will say this is a different context. The width of the streets are similar. The volumes are similar, but there are more cars that are using 6th Avenue compared to University. So the volumes are a little bit higher. And then the other thing is that the blocks are longer on 6th Avenue compared to the University. And so that means there's going to be more parking loss when you have shorter blocks. So that's why, you know, those are just some of the trade-offs, but I wanted to give that context of the effort that we went through previously to test this option in a similar street. And then specifically for 6th Avenue, as I mentioned, we started some outreach back in 2021. We had three public meetings. One of them was virtual, two were in person. We did not show the double buffered option. So we only, you know, at that time, we were simply going with the curb protected option that was in the voter materials. And I'll say the feedback on that was mixed as well. We did get some folks saying, hey, I really want this. I feel really comfortable when I'm in a protected bike lane. And we had some other folks saying, oh, I don't know. I don't know if that's really going to work. There's some other challenges. I think Betsy Larson brought some of those up during the call of the audience. And so we've been listening and we've been thinking. And so I think now we're at the point where we're getting ready to make a kind of a recommendation that we want the commission to respond to. I think this might, I'm getting towards the end of my presentation here. This might be one of my last slides, but I do want to bring up cost because this is valid. In 2018, we estimated the cost for all these projects. And as all of you know, I'm sure the construction costs have risen significantly. So we have about $700,000 remaining after we finish the design. And you can see that both of the options that we have here exceed what we were originally planning to spend. The curb protected option is about $760,000 more, we think, than the painted buffer only option. And I'll just say that both of these options assume that we would do a mill and a resurface of the street. So the pavement condition is poor on 6th Avenue. We know that we have to remove the existing lane striping and put new lane striping down. The most efficient way to do that and what we think will be the best result is to remove at least a couple of inches of asphalt and then put new asphalt down. And so that's what we're looking at right now. And that's the cost difference. So this is just a summary of kind of the pros and cons of the two different options that I presented tonight. I think I'm not going to read all this, but the highlights are, you know, the protected bike lane option may provide a higher level of comfort for people bicycling. You know, I think we heard a lot of that from folks tonight that some people, you know, just don't, without a physical element, they don't feel safe. Even though that we think we can mitigate speeds with the double buffered bike lane option in a way that's consistent with national design guidance, I still hear, you know, that not everybody feels comfortable when there's not physical protection. The parking loss is one of the issues, of course, that we discussed. There's more parking loss with the protected bike lane, and it's a higher cost. So that's kind of an overview. And now I'm going to turn it over to Sam to present our staff recommendation.
Great. Thanks so much, Colin. And so, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, you know, as you can tell, we took a really close look at this project. We spent a lot of time looking at all the different aspects, the concerns from the community, the concerns from the neighbors, and ultimately we landed on our staff recommendation as option two, which is the double buffered bike lane. We believe that this addresses the concerns from the neighbors that have been brought up, both directly to us and before you this evening. You know, we have the data that supports that when paired with some of the other treatment types we'll be using with this project, that it will achieve the goals of the project and ultimately, you know, will result in some cost savings, although that's not the main driver of our recommendation here. And if you go to the next slide, Colin. The last slide here is just a reminder of the project change process. I feel like every time I come to this table, we're talking about, you know, some of the scope changes and You know, at the time that 407 was conceived, you know, we used the best available information we had when we put these project scopes together. You know, and thankful that we have this change process, because as we go through these designs, we find that things come up and that, you know, it gives us a little bit to work with and work with you all to address those concerns. So this is a little snippet from the project change process. I want to, you know, point out the highlighted areas is that, you know, we can make changes to the scope if during the design process we find that they improve safety, connectivity, and create cost efficiencies. I think what Colin has laid out for you tonight is that the option included in our recommendation will improve safety over what's out there today. It does provide some connectivity, and as you saw on the last couple slides there, it does create some cost efficiencies. But ultimately, the decision does lie with the commission. And so what we're here today is to ask for action and support the staff recommendation. We're happy to answer any questions that you have with the material that we presented this evening. And, you know, I thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. So I have a question. I'll just I would like each of the commissioners have a chance to comment or ask questions, but until everybody's had a chance to do so before you go, we'll go around again. I think that's fair.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Who would like to lead off with some questions or comments? Who would most like?
And it has to do with, I'm thinking that when you come down 6th Avenue or 4th Avenue, you know, parking is my concern. Is there enough room left if you park your car here and the bike is coming back, like you said, when you open that door and the bike won't hit that door, it just come back if you have them to open up your door?
Yeah, thanks, Willie, for the
message.
Yeah, so Colin, I don't know if you heard the question. Mr. Blake's asking, is there enough room to open the door in the double buffered bike lane option? I think you had a slide on that, right? Oh, we've got the slides here. There we go. So if you can see that there's a 3-foot buffer between the parking lane and the bike lane,
okay,
that's the zone where the door would be open.
Okay, I miss it. Okay.
Yeah, and car doors, just for reference, are usually about 2.5 feet wide or long, I guess. So got a little bit of extra space there to make sure it's not encroaching into the bike lane.
Okay, I'm satisfied.
Okay,
thank you.
Another question, Kendall?
I would feel much more comfortable with option 2 if you can kind of really convince me that the narrowness of the street and any other factors are going to calm traffic and slow it down. And you say here that speeds could be managed with speed tables. That doesn't sound like it's definitely a part of design, only that it could be.
Sure.
Is it likely that you will do speed tables?
That's a great question. Colin, do you want to take that one?
Sure. Yeah, it is a great question, and it's absolutely something that we'll explore. What we've heard from folks is that, so there are some existing speed tables out there today, and what I've heard from several folks is that they're not aggressive enough in their design to calm traffic appropriately. And so I think what we'd be looking to do is look at those existing speed humps and see if there's a way to modify them so that we can get the speeds down into that 25 mile per hour range. Because we don't want to, you know, quote unquote, downgrade the facility type and have it be less comfortable or less safe than what the voters approved. So that is our intent, is to explore increasing the number of speed tables and modifying the design of the ones that are out there today to get the speeds to the target range. There are some potential stormwater concerns. What happens is when you've got water flowing down the street, it can hit the speed hump and then kind of flow out, you know, to the existing curbs. We just have to be really careful that we don't want to flood anybody's property, and we don't want to impact a FEMA flood zone. But we've done some preliminary analysis on the possible stormwater concerns, and we're feeling pretty confident that in the blocks where we don't have existing speed tables, we could add more to those blocks.
That drivers can see them coming. And I've noticed speed tables sometimes that maybe it originally had striping on it or something, but it's become kind of semi-invisible. So, it's bad for the driver if you hit a speed table going too fast, bad for the car, but it only works if you see it coming and slow down. So would something that really lasts a long time helping drivers see it be a part of the design of these speed tables?
Sure, absolutely. And so I think, Colin mentioned that the existing speed tables, since we are talking about milling and resurfacing 6th Avenue, would likely be removed and replaced, probably retooled a little bit to be more effective. They would receive a thermoreflective striping, advanced warning signs, and also raised pavement markings to make them more visible and object markers on the side. So, yeah, so it will come with all of that. And, by the way, if you see any around town that don't, need some refreshing, give us a call and we'll get those fixed up for you.
Thank you.
Kristen? I have a question.
Oh, go ahead, Kathy.
Okay. Besides all that, I'm liking that the double buffer increasing the bump out, the speed control, but is there any way to even lower the speed limit from 30 to 25 at all? Would that be a possibility, and how would we go about that?
I think that's unfortunately set by the State Department as far as what residential street, whether this qualifies as a residential street or an arterial street.
This street, and Colin, jump in if I get anything wrong. This is not a residential street.
Okay,
we do have some flexibility in setting speed limits. There are some of that speed limit setting is governed by the state. You're right. One of the things we would have to do to examine that is a traffic study, which our traffic engineering department can take on. And so, while we can't say yes in this context, yes, absolutely, we will reduce the speed limit, we can't say that we have some flexibility to explore that and could take on a traffic study and see kind of what the speed limit reduction recommendation it would make. And by the way, just to open the black box on that study, it's generally looking at, how do you set them appropriately for the given context with adjacent land uses to optimize safety.
Can you clarify just what a traffic study looks at? Prevailing number of cars, the number of speeds, that kind of thing.
Yes, that kind of thing. And I would really want to defer to our traffic engineers to speak at length on it, but that's essentially it. Colin, I don't know if you would add anything.
Yeah, typically they measure the speeds and look at the mix of vehicles. So, like, are there a lot of heavy vehicles? Is it mostly passenger vehicles? Turning movements, a lot of different factors, just to kind of make sure, because what we don't want to do is just put a sign up and have everybody ignore it. So we need to make sure that it's the speed limit that we post is something that people are going to follow.
It's actually very publicly available. So the process for setting speed limits is there's a model. It's called U.S. Limits 2. It's produced by the Federal Highway Administration. We adopt that procedure, and so that's what we would follow. And so actually it's all very well spelled out in that, what are the inputs to that model and how it's weighted to result in a speed limit recommendation.
Yep. And just the final step in that process is it would go to mayor and council for a recommendation to change the speed limit.
But could this commission request a study on that on 6th Avenue?
Yep, absolutely.
Could be part of our recommendation.
That sure absolutely could.
Okay, thank you. Who else would like Kathy or Nicole or
Dr. Spark, can I jump on your question?
Sure. Go ahead.
Would it be possible to, since it's going to mayor and council for approval, if there is a
speed the study.
Yes, I'm wondering if there's any way to skip the study, if there's consensus from people that have elderly individuals and bikes, and we want to decrease the speed limit. Is there any way to skip having to pay for this and move it to mayor and council and just decrease it to 25? Is that possible?
We don't have to pay for it. So our traffic engineers can do that study in-house. Mm-hmm. I would not recommend skipping that process because, as Andy said, you would not want to just arbitrarily set the speed limit without making sure that it's the right context for the right application. But I do think there may be an opportunity, given the improvements we're making here, to look at the speed limits as part of that. We're already doing that with our bike boulevards that we install. Y'all are familiar with those, and we typically do lower the speed limits to 20 miles per hour for bike boulevards. We could certainly take a look at Sixth Avenue as part of your recommendation tonight. And then just ultimately the last step is mayor and council is the only body that can change the speed limit.
And how long will that delay the project?
That shouldn't delay the project at all.
Excellent. Thank you.
And, you know, I would just add, while I think it's an important consideration and something to investigate, changing the actual posted speed, the most impactful things to do to reduce observed traffic speeds are physical improvements, like in this context, speed humps. And so that would probably be, and narrowing of travel lanes, which this option is already prioritized. So in my professional opinion, you know, changing the signs is sort of like a cherry on top to the actual, you know, physical infrastructure slowing driver speed.
Question.
Yes, please, Lisa.
How about roundabouts? Those are very effective in the neighborhoods. We're having some put in by Monzo Elementary School, where we have these cars that just go as fast as they can. They do their donuts right there, right at the corner of the school at Monzo. And roundabouts seem to work really good here in the Dunbar Spring area, around Grupo. And with me, I'm just having a hard time because we always seem to be prioritizing the car and making sure the car is safe as opposed to keeping the cyclist safe. So here the car is number one. Here comes a group of kids or whomever walking, cycling, and then the car just pulls out. So we would have to yield for the car.
With
this option. And to me, I'm just...
Can I add to that a little bit?
Sure, Willie.
Now, them guys don't get whooped. If they go over there to hell, they want them roundabout. No, really. I'm going to lay it on you like it is because... I'm sorry.
Go for it.
The roundabout bring on a lot of confusion, anger, everything with the roundabout. They know what I'm saying.
It's not a four-way stop.
So everybody's trying to take a breath. Chairman will recognize that's not part of the current design, obviously. We'll make a recommendation, and staff can at least consider that it was brought up tonight.
Mr.
John, did you have a chance? Or
Mr. Chair, could I just I just want to make one clarification.
Sure.
A lot of the areas you talked about are actual traffic circles. We have very few roundabouts in the city, but we have many traffic circles. Sixth Avenue is considered an arterial. I'm not sure that we would consider a traffic circle on Sixth Avenue, and a roundabout or traffic circles are not currently included in the scope of the project.
All right. Thank you. That's good.
John and Ryan.
Okay. Let's take somebody, Ryan, and then we'll go to John.
Thank you, Dr. Sparks. I just want to preface my comment with expressing my sincere appreciation for all the efforts that our staff do, our city staff. I think Sam and Colin and Andy are consummate professionals, and so I really appreciate that excellent presentation. I feel nervous about making this comment because I try to, you know, thread the needle on making everyone happy, but I want to recognize that the city is often left balancing sometimes competing priorities that our citizens and constituents have. So I think that Prop 407 was a clear signal from the public, like many of the comments we heard tonight, that we want to add more weight to the consideration of pedestrian bicycle safety. I think we want to de-emphasize prioritizing vehicular traffic and vehicular parking needs. We want to say it is time to make some hard sacrifices to really put a down payment on changing the way that people consider how they're going to use our urban infrastructure. I mean, streets are some of our most sacred public spaces. And at this point, it's almost a wholesale giveaway to vehicular traffic and the automotive agencies. And I'm excited to see this contentious, but I believe very needed migration toward a more people, pedestrian, and bicycle-centered way of moving about our cities. I think it's the right thing to do environmentally. I think it's the right thing to do in terms of people's overall happiness. And I think it's more economical in the long run. I mean, I do want to say that I really hear loud and clear DTM's kind of emphasis on the budget piece. That said, if we're going to talk about how we're running out of money, That should be a holistic review, not just a piece by piece, project by project. We should take a big picture view of where we think we need to make cuts, not just go with kind of the easy thing of, oh, we've got a compelling advocate in Ward 6 here and a compelling advocate who's well, you know, fluent in the issues and Jim Glock, though I appreciate his service to the city. I think it needs to be a much bigger analysis, not just, hey, commissioners, we got this one pushback. Maybe we should compromise here. I think it needs to be a bigger analysis. I also want to say that some of this does come down to some kind of some subjective, people's preferences, like preferred versus buffered. I bicycle every single day. I used to live in Dunbar. I now live in Armory Park. I use Sixth Avenue constantly. I work at TEP. And I'll tell you, as a cyclist who is very capable, I do not feel as protected by a buffered bike lane as I do a protected one. My daughter did El Grupo the summer. She rode 15 miles, and I guarantee you, when she was on buffered bike lanes, I did not feel that she was safe. I wanted her in a protected bike lane. She's 11 years old. I also want to feel confident that my daughter can ride these streets. So, you know, again, I feel a little nervous about that because I really respect DTM, but I want to say the reason I've been volunteering on this commission for years at 6, 7 p.m. at night when I want to be watching a presidential debate is because I care about these issues. And I want to say that when I voted for 407, I voted because of that explicit, clearly laid out language that the city promised to the voters, and I want to help the city keep its promise. So I feel very passionate at this point about, I don't want to suddenly say, yeah, let's give up another protected bike lane. Even though it's that short, it's one of the very few north-south corridors that we have. And so to relinquish this feels like a major step back. I just want to say that, and I want to apologize for how worked up I am, but I feel strongly about the issue. So thanks for the time, Dr. Sparks.
Well, Ryan, why don't you just say it like it is?
Thank you for your passion and your point of view. You've made a major impact on all of us. Your comments are well taken and well considered. Someone else, another commissioner, would like to address.
John and then
Nicole. John, sorry.
Before we go, Nicole had put into the chat that she needs to leave at 6:30. We're approaching that time, so one, since her hand is.
Okay, thank you. Nicole, do you want to address?
Just quickly, appreciate everybody's comments. It's obviously like super complex. I'm wondering, I would only vote in favor of the double buffered if we were definitely getting the speed humps and the goal of reducing to the speed limit. But my question is, if we add the speed humps, do you get to the same cost as the protected bike lane option?
Yeah, what is the cost of additional each speed table?
Just
roughly like $7,000 to $12,000, because this is a wider street, you know, and there's speed tables on the higher end per. I think both options were already over, so it'll increase the budget on the option that's already over, but marginally so. And I think, as Sam mentioned earlier, you know, probably shouldn't be a primary driving consideration, that negligible cost.
Oh, Nicole, do you have a preference as far as which option? Because if you.
I don't know. I mean, I'll try and hang on here for a little bit. I've got to say, I hear both sides at this point.
Okay. Thank you. John Anderson.
I would just like to echo what Lisa and what Ryan so passionately said. I was also kind of nervous about expressing a sense of disappointment in this new option. I'm kind of mystified by your chosen path, given what both federal guidelines have suggested here. And we all know FHWA is not a bike-friendly kind of a guideline, and even it suggested that the protected bike lane was the option to pursue. So I'm kind of wondering why you're going with the option that you are in the face of what the guidelines suggest.
Good question. Colin, do you want
to? Huh? Sure, yeah, I'll take a first crack at that, and then you can add. And Sam can add on to it. I think one of the things is that what the guidance says is either you need a protected bike lane or you need to reduce vehicle speeds. And so that's why we ended up with these two options. One is the protected bike lane option, and the other option is trying to reduce vehicle speeds to get to that 25 mile an hour threshold. And I don't know who's controlling the screen right now, but if we go back up to the guidance, we can kind of see a little bit more clearly kind of what those options are and how we got there. So you can see that it's highlighted here in red. It says protected bicycle lane or reduced speed. And then if you go to the next slide, it has those speeds. And so these are slightly different, but they're, you know, generally in line with each other, generally match each other from FHWA and from NACDO. And so if you can imagine that red dot sliding to the left a bit to get down to 25 or 30 miles an hour, it would be in that realm of this is an all ages and abilities facility with just the bike lane without the protection. So that's how we got here in terms of understanding that there is flexibility based on the travel speeds of the vehicles in getting to an all ages and abilities facility. That said, there's undeniably kind of some people have a preference for physical protection, and I hear that. And that, you know, I think Ryan Anderson made a good point on that. The other reason, you know, I think that we're looking at the double buffered option, and that's kind of where we landed, is because of that $760,000 price difference between the two of them. You know, the reality is we are kind of in a hole when it comes to delivering these projects. And so it's difficult for us to kind of keep kicking the can down the road in terms of like, how are we going to find the, you know, money? I mean, we are going to deliver all these projects, but we also have to be fiscally responsible. So I think that's kind of why we are where we are.
Kathy, do you want to comment?
Just one more thing. I'm ultimately thinking the pedestrian takes precedence over any vehicle, any bike, any vehicle, motorized. And I feel like having the parking out there, you're limiting people with that are age restricted, mobility issues, young children who can't do that, and ultimately the pedestrian rules out. And I do understand the bike need, and I think we do need to do that throughout Tucson, but I also feel like we have to think of our pedestrian first and foremost.
Okay. Another round of comments.
Yes,
Krista?
Thank you, Dr. Spurk. I did want to mention a few things I think is important to me. So of the public health achievements, the top 10, other than like vaccines and safer workplaces, we have motor vehicle safety in the top 10. And I feel like as a board, it's our responsibility to not only build this community into social connections, but to deliver on what was approved by the voters. And I think that creating a safer environment for cyclists and for pedestrians might increase the amount of people that use the form of transportation there. And I see this actually potentially help decrease the amount of traffic in the area and heading into downtown. So it helps accessibility both ways. And as a public health professional, the cost of diabetes, of health, like hospitalizations if you get hit by a vehicle, is going to far exceed what it's going to cost to put an actual protected buffer in. And also, I wanted to kind of bring it back to Complete Streets policy was approved by city and mayor and council, in 2019. And I feel like there's some really good information there that I would almost ask. I know, staff, you do so much good work. I've been on your side. But maybe refresh and double check, see what other resources are there that we could adopt again. And with that being said, I recommend option one with the, again, taking into account health-related costs from an activity, health problems, potential hospitalizations. I got hit on University because the car didn't park all the way to the curb. And so that little gap they have to open their door, that's not a difference. You'll still get hit if you're in a bike. And lastly, again, I think it's our responsibility to deliver on the project promised to the voters, which is why we're all here. Thank you.
Thank you. Another commissioner, additional comment. Kendall, please.
Two questions. One is that one of the arguments for more protection is that currently Sixth Avenue is one of the few ways to get downtown. there. But in the future, with finishing downtown links and perhaps other projects in the area, will there be more options to get around that area besides 6th Avenue? And my second question is, if we stay with option one and very much higher cost, what is that going to do this timeline, and what will be the process for dealing with that extra cost specifically?
Thanks, Kendall. I'll answer question one and probably phone a friend for question two. Question one, so Downtown Links is expected to be complete this spring. With that completion, we'll bring restoring the north-south connectivity at 9th Avenue with the Deck Plaza and restoring the at-grade railroad crossing for bicyclists and pedestrians. It's also expected to restore the north-south crossing at the 7th Avenue railroad crossing. That would allow you connectivity to either head north along the multi-use path or head kind of southeast and then underneath the new bridge there on, at 6th Avenue. So both of those will be restored later next year. On the second question, I think that the timeline in terms of design remains the same. We need to get past this decision point so that way we can move the consultant forward and finalize the design plans. How are we going to shore up that funding? I mean, that's the question the staff has to answer. We're working on it actively. I think you're going to get a more holistic presentation that Ryan is looking for at the next regularly scheduled BOC meeting. As Colin said, not delivering is not an option. We absolutely will deliver all of the projects in Prop 407. We're just going to have to get a little bit creative and work really hard as staff to be able to figure out how to pay for it.
Thank you.
So you're looking for a vote so you can go on with this option?
To change the original option that was approved by the voters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I can just clarify. So we do have two options, and option one does include a small scope change at the south end. And that's because a lot of the reasons that Colin talked about, you know, we can always have Colin rehash that, but there was a pretty major concern about losing a lot of that parking at that south end for those businesses there. And as well as some of the drainage concerns. So, If we do anything tonight, we want to make sure at least that's captured as part of the recommendation by the commission. Staff recommendation is option two, but the two options before you do have some level of scope change involved with them.
Question, Dr. Spark?
Yes.
I'm sure staff did the work. I'm sure there's redirecting for parking either more up north or more south or to adjacent roads. So based on the scoping that you've done, how can we redirect that? The parking needs,
Colin,
for businesses.
Colin, do you know that answer? Did we look at that?
We haven't looked at that in detail. I think the opportunities for on-street parking, in the neighborhoods are more plentiful. I think in the southern section where there are businesses, it's kind of a larger commercial district overall. So there's competition for on-street parking on adjacent streets. We have not looked at that in detail. We didn't look at doing something like, opportunities for constructing a parking garage or anything like that. But I do think there are some constraints in that southern portion of the project.
Yeah, and I'd also just add that on the southern portion, there's already angled parking on the side streets. So it's pretty limited in terms of what's available on that southern.
So let's see. With either plan, the plans for 5th to 7th Street are going to be the same.
That's
so
correct.
So we're not really going to be discussing a change. That moves forward. Or do we need to tie that with the other option?
Yeah, so the changes that would be considered tonight are option one or option two. Option one and two have the same configuration south of Fifth
Street. That's right. Okay. Yes.
So north of Fifth Street, though, that's where there's a major change in the scope.
Okay. So the commission understands that we're not going.
I just wanted, if I might,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Please. No, go ahead.
I just wanted to
voice one last thought to my fellow committee members, which is that for those of you who don't perhaps ride a bike as frequently as others do, there's a psychologically a big difference between a paint stripe and a curb in terms of a separation from vehicular traffic. You just feel a lot safer when you have something that's concrete that separates you from much faster, much heavier. So, and especially if we're trying to encourage the younger population of the city to take up the wheels, bicycles, I think it's a great, it's a small stretch of roadway, but I think it's an important start to get kids on bikes.
All right. I'm going to call the...
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, can I make a motion?
Yeah, we'll I'll move to a motion, but I just want to, what we're really talking about is a change from Speedway to Fifth Street.
No, the
potential.
It is a change. So on option one, it's a change from Fifth to Seventh only.
All right.
On option two, it's a change from Speedway to Seventh.
Okay. All right. Thank you for clarifying. Okay. You want to offer a motion, Kathy?
No, what I would like to do is whatever the motion is, can we put the diagram up on the screen so we're clear on what we're which one we're voting on?
Yeah, I'd appreciate that too. I got a little confused.
Yeah. Thank you.
Had a very, very hearty discussion, some passion, a few insights too. The chair, welcome a motion so we can move forward on this issue.
Mr. Chair, I move option one primarily because I think we can't be guaranteed that the speeds will be reduced.
I second that.
Okay. All right. Discussion on motion to approve option one. Kenzie.
One final question about the budget overrun on option one. What's the range of sources for that extra money? And would this be taking money away from other similar connections projects in the future in this bond?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Kendall. So the range of sources is everything from obviously the 407 bond revenue, the general fund. We're looking at impact fees. And we are also looking at, in terms of the connection project specifically, we are looking at our DTM operating budget, if there's any available dollars to add to it. So those are the range of options that we have.
So it could be spread over a variety of sources.
Correct. That's correct.
There's always hope when it comes to that. All right.
Question.
Oh, and I'm sorry. I left out one more. I'm sorry. And we're also looking at federal grants. I think you know that we've been successful on other projects.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor.
A hand up.
Second, comments.
I'm sorry.
I can't.
Chairman, since my name was mentioned by one of your board members in reference to this topic, I would like to have an opportunity to just make a few items and it won't fray things. I'll keep it to
and
that.
That's, this is seconds. Really extraordinary. It's really out of order. I'm sorry.
I'll accept your decision.
Okay. No, I have to. I mean, it's unfortunately we're burdened with these rules.
Mr. Spark, okay. Would you like us to put the option one yes on the screen?
Yes. Thank you.
Sorry, Dr. Spark. I do have a question on option one. For staff, why the protected bike lane isn't considered for Suite 6 and 7?
I'm sorry, say that again.
So for option one, I'm wondering why isn't it the protected bike lane not considered from like Speedway all the way through? Oh, it is through 7th, sorry. Why isn't it considered all the way through 7th Street? So it goes 5th, 6th, 7th, heading more south.
Yep, so from 5th south to 7th, and if you could go back to the longer one. Yep. So from 5th Street to 7th Street, that is that more commercial district where we are trying to limit the loss of parking in that area. And so our recommendation there is to go with the enhanced buffered bike lane to limit the loss of parking. That's where we saw the parking utilization was the highest. And as we mentioned just previously, there's not a lot of other good options for parking for those businesses along that corridor.
Okay.
is there any I know we don't want to go back, but extending it to fifth only makes sense if we're talking about parks and connectivity. The whole idea is to move away from the vehicle-centric type of development. So it's like you're missing the last two roads heading into downtown that would protect the bikes. I guess I don't understand why it wasn't extended.
Colin, you want to expand on that?
Yeah, yeah. We did originally look at doing the parking protection option all the way down to 7th Street. Sam mentioned the parking concerns. I hear your response to that, Commissioner. The other issue is stormwater. And so we had our drainage expert take a look at that internally. And basically from 7th Street to halfway up the block between 5th and 6th Street, there's high volumes of stormwater flowing down the street. Unfortunately, Tucson does not have an extensive storm drain network underground. And so even if we wanted to add the raised curb elements and make it protected, we wouldn't be able to do that. So that's also part of what played into that decision.
That's a good point, Colin, that it's a reality of living in Tucson and dealing with stormwater and antiquated drainage systems. I know one of the things with the underpass was the 75% of the money went to put in a new storm drain system there to protect downtown. Okay, I would like to then call for a vote on the motion. The motion is the option number one design. It's been moved and seconded. Right now, a roll call.
Can we confirm that that is a protected, not the buffered?
Yeah, so from Speedway to 5th Street is a curb-separated bike lane. From 5th Street to 7th is a double-buffered bike lane. And we can show you the cross-sections if you go to the next slide. So that's Speedway to 5th Street. And you can see that it is a curb-protected bike lane.
Okay.
If you go to the next slide, this is the section. This is the actual change request that we're asking, that this is going to be the double-buffered bike lane for that segment from 5th to 7th Street.
Thank you. Okay. We need a roll call. I was just curious about the speed table redesign. You could make cuts in the speed table, have water running through it. I mean,
We typically can separate down the middle. You have to be careful. The gap gets too big.
Oh, yeah.
People kind of drive around them. So, yeah, we will. We can try to address that. Yeah.
Roll call, please.
Okay. Chairman Ron Spark?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. John Anderson?
Yeah, so the vote is, if I say yes, I'm supporting option one.
You're right.
Option one.
Yes.
Thank you. Brian Anderson?
Yes.
Thank you. Nicole Fife? She's there.
Yes.
Thank you. Kathy Krishner?
No.
Mr. Romero Cardenas?
Yes, but for the record, I do want to ask staff to look into parking loss for residents and also investigate stormwater concerns and looking at parking redirection. If we're removing asphalt, we might as well just see what other options exist since we're taking it all up. And yes.
Lisa Vega?
I am voting yes for the protected bike lane. Option one.
Looks like motion passes.
You don't miss me like that.
Commissioner Willie Bike?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Commissioner Willie Bike?
Yes.
Don't miss me. And Commissioner Kendall Prosser?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes.
The
motion passes. Everybody was yay minus one.
Okay.
This is all said, and I'd like to. I didn't cast my vote, and I'd like to support option one.
Okay. Thank you. Well, thank you. Thank you for the commission, and thank you for the staff. This was really excellent. Very clear. It's actually a pretty complicated presentation to understand, and obviously a lot of legwork and using standards to try to guide. And my only comment is that I have a sense that somehow or other the neighborhood felt that there could have been a little more interface getting down towards the end. I think some of the neighbors expressed that this caught them a little bit by surprise. I think you kind of expressed that. So that's just an editorial comment. I'm going to close this part of the session. It was good. It was the work we do that's important, and we now can move forward on this project. I'd like to then move to the next project change request having to do with Jacobs Park and the Ochoa Sports Complex lighting. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for coming.
Jasmine's actually going to go over the actual change, but did want to highlight that we were very successful with some good news, that we had applied for the Outdoor Recreation Legacy Project funding for Jacobs Park. And really the motivator of that was to be able to, after the master plan process, to be able to deliver more elements of the master plan. And we found out about a month ago that we were successful in getting $2.9 million. So that's matching dollars to Prop 407 dollars, plus impact fees, ARPA funding as well. That's all of them, right?
Storm to Shade.
Could you tell us what impact fees are, just to refresh?
Sure. So impact fees are fees that are collected through development projects. So when someone is going through PDSD's process of a new project, there is an impact fee that is assessed, and that fee is distributed across a couple different departments. Parks happens to be one of them. And then depending on where that project is occurring, the money is then allocated to an account, and those accounts are shared. So depending on which series of funding that we're talking about, the original series had multiple ward sharing accounts. Now the new series has two wards sharing each account, which is a lot simpler and easier for us to direct the money. So I have Jasmine's here, as well as the project manager, Joe Barr, to just go over what the recommended change is that we're bringing to you for this park.
Actually, could you pass me the mouse? Because the list in the bond language is quite extensive, and I want to pull that up for us to be able to look at. A little bit bigger. So we have a long list of items at Jacobs Park that were included in the bond language for improvement. One of them is complete, like the new shade over the Milagro playground. And then there are many others that were included into this master planning process, which we went down with the understanding that Jacobs Park is in need of some new amenities that are more up to date, more current for neighbors and users to be able to enjoy. So through that master planning process, we had online surveys, we had virtual public meetings, we had in-person meetings, we met with various user groups who are at that park, and the key changes identified through that master planning process was reconfiguration of the existing softball fields to utilize a shared outfield into that more traditional four-leaf clover alignment, right, that allows for tournaments to be able to be played because each outfield is now independent of one another. Relocating and expanding the dog park, creating a family game zone, adding a futsal court, adding pickleball courts, and adding a skate park. The estimate for constructing the entire master plan is $12 million. As you can see on page 2 of the memo and also up here, even with the grant, we are not near enough to that $12 million mark to be looking at implementing the entirety of that master plan. So our goal
is to use the funding sources that we have available to us and are allocated to this project to implement as much of the master plan as we can, and meet the needs that have been expressed during public engagement. So all of these bond items, save for the last four, are included in the project scope. So this request, change of request, is related to these last four items. I'll take them one by one. So that fourth from the bottom is renovate four basketball courts and two tennis courts. What we found during our survey process and public engagement is that the current tennis courts are used by a futsal group rather than tennis players, and staff is recommending repurposing those courts to futsal courts to better meet the needs of the current user group. I will share also, in order to meet existing use as well, we are looking at splitting, currently it's two tennis courts, splitting that into one tennis court and one futsal court, and so we'll be adding a fence down the middle. The next two items are related to lighting.
So you'll take away one of the tennis courts.
That's correct. And add a futsal court, which we currently do not have. The next two items on the list of bond projects are new LED lights on two existing multipurpose fields and upgrading lights on soccer fields G, H, and I to LED. So this part, I'll go through the blurb first, and then we'll take a look at the table that Greg has constructed. So currently, the lighting on soccer fields G, H, and I are working, and we believe that there is still 5 to 10 years of life expectancy based on its 30-year life cycle. We are recommending reallocating the funding for lighting the multi-purpose fields and the upgraded lighting on those soccer fields, G, H, and I, to implementing a skate park, lighting the softball fields, expanding the dog park, and the family picnic and game area. So, question, Jasmine?
Uh-huh. Sorry, Chair, if I may. Just a quick question. When I was looking on the map, I couldn't find the skate park, one. And two, I noticed that there was lighting for the pickleball courts, but no lighting for the futsal. Was that a typo? Just because we know that kids usually go out and play at night, and that's what the constituent said, that they're using the court.
Oops.
And it's just located in this spot over here. Take your time. It's fine.
Yeah, take your time.
We have all night. Someone bring out the margarita.
I believe there is current lighting at the tennis court.
Yeah, but it's
taken that would light the futsal court as well. If that's your question.
Well, it looks like they're separated now. So if there's only lighting in the pickleball court, it's going to leave the futsal, which is a bit without the lighting.
So instead of building a separate futsal court, we would take the existing lit dual tennis court and make one of those courts a futsal court and one a tennis court.
Oh, on the map, they're completely separated. Is that not accurate then?
That's correct.
What they're suggesting. They're suggesting splitting the current tennis courts in half, half futsal, half tennis. And they're lit, but they're not LED.
Understood. As someone that plays indoor soccer, I don't think that's going to work with the tennis people because you're kicking around a soccer ball and it easily, you could hurt someone on the other side.
So we're going to have a fence down the middle of the court. Yeah, so it'll be separated by a fence.
That might work.
That's correct.
How tall? How high?
We're currently having our architect design that. But I assume it would be as high as the existing fence around the tennis court, which I believe is 8 foot high.
Oh. Can you zoom in, Jasmine, so they can see how it looks on the map? Because it's separated on the map, so that's why it's a little confusing.
So in order to meet the financial considerations here, we don't have 12 million. We have more than $8 million. Mm-hmm. We're trying to combine certain project elements and still bring all these different elements to everybody. And so we're going to have to combine some things.
Yeah.
Or we're going to have to eliminate some things.
The short-term proposal is not the master plan, because there's some differences there, right?
So, Chair and Commissioners, there is a master planning process, right, which is very aspirational and came up with lots of ideas. Then there was a phase one planning process, which is where we're in, which is also somewhat aspirational, while we were applying for the grant and looking for funding sources. So we had our architect consultant group kind of design as much as possible that we thought could be built while we applied for this grant and while we looked at things like these other funding sources. Now we're at the point where we know exactly what the funding sources are that we have available, and we're working with our architect and with your permission to kind of do the sausage making to make everything work out.
By any chance, is there a cost breakdown for those items just so we could see kind of how those trade-offs are working?
There was a cost program developed 2 years ago.
Got it.
Right? So that's kind of the basis of how we're doing some of this stuff. But, yeah, in the context of 2 years ago pricing versus today's pricing. Mm-hmm. So we're working with the consultant group once again. We just met with them last week, and they're doing some changes per this recommendation. And we're going to meet with them again if we get your blessing and try to put together a package for a successful bid. Right?
And so where would the skate park go on the map if it were to go there?
There are several different options that we have them exploring right now.
Got it.
What we're looking at is a skate plaza that would be ramps on flat work, so not a concrete bowl, but taking perhaps an existing court, perhaps the basketball court by the YMCA, which has the short right there, the number 19.
I think that still states it's a basketball court. But I understand. We're moving
it
around.
We have an adult-sized basketball court, and then that basketball court by the Y is like a little kid's court, like an elementary school court. So one of our proposals is to take half of that court as the skate plaza.
Okay. Yeah, but that's not part of this change at this point.
That's correct. That's not in the current proposal.
I'd like to really stick with the proposed changes, sir.
If I may comment on one thing, the assessment that tennis courts are not used for tennis is an incorrect assessment. I live right across the street from the park. I have for over 34 years. The futsal players, I don't know if you got that email, very aggressive.
That's your communication. You sent us the commission a letter.
Uh-huh.
About your concern about the football people knocking down the tennis.
Right, and brutalizing tennis players.
Because technically you can't address the commission at this point.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I don't know. This is my first time. I'm an engineer here.
That's okay.
Blake Willie.
You better call the audience and I should have asked you. But we did, just to be clear, we got your long letter and communication, and we all read it with concern, and it was very well put about what you had to deal with. And we've got a couple tennis players in here, so you have some simpatico on the
commission. Is there a point I could speak?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm sorry.
It was in the beginning.
Okay.
You missed it.
So, all right. So
I thought being on the agenda, I'm sorry, I'm comparing it to mayor council meeting.
Really? Yeah, I apologize for
that. That's been my experience.
Okay, so we're pretty close to talking about what the change, that the commission has to vote on a change,
yes,
correct?
Yes, yeah. So I just quickly wanted to walk us through this change on lighting to make clear what this proposal would result in. So our current inventory, we see this listed out on the left side, right? We have 3 lighted soccer fields and 4 unlighted soccer fields. After this change, we would remain having 3 lighted soccer fields and we would have 5 unlighted soccer fields. So the configuration to smaller sized fields was at the request of soccer leagues. So you'll see that's a change in the documents as well. And then in terms of softball, we've got 2 lighted softball fields currently. After construction, we would still have 2 lighted softball fields. We have 1 lighted little league that remains, 1 unlit softball field and 1 unlit little league field, and that would be turned into 2 unlighted softball fields. So this last bullet point is just clarifying that during the construction bidding process, we are identifying lighting the remaining 2 softball fields as well as the LED uprights on the soccer fields. as well as other options as bid alternates. So should the bids come in favorably, we can accomplish more than we currently think we can, given the estimates we have available to us.
Okay. So the motion will permit your flexibility depending on what the bids come in. Right. Okay.
Clarification question.
Of course.
Director Spark. For the unlit soccer, because I know we're talking about Jacobs and Ochoa, right? So when you're saying five unlighted soccer fields, how are those dispersed among both parks?
So these would be the ones that wouldn't be lighted. So currently, okay. It's the three that are currently lit are on the Ochoa.
In Ochoa. So nothing in Jacobs Park per soccer fields would be lit at night.
Correct.
Okay.
That's currently also how it, the Jacobs yeah. site is not lit.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Any more on the presentation? Thank you. I can see that I'm glad you're here because obviously this is a carve out. This is a step forward and it's needed. And depending on the bids, we can actuate it. So the chair will welcome a motion to approve.
Just have a couple of questions.
Of course.
Thanks.
John.
Joe, did you have a chance to look up the proximity to the nearest alternative tennis courts to this park?
Yes, I did. So Wildwood Park is up at River and Camino de la Tierra. That's a county park that has some tennis courts. That's about 5 miles away. Himmel Park tennis courts are about 6 miles. And then the tennis center here is and Fort Lowell are probably closer to 8 miles. So I don't think we can play anymore, and I defer to you tennis folks if we can use Amphi or Flowing Wells High School tennis courts. I know we used to be able to back in the day.
Yes, used to.
But, you know, probably not now.
Right. Yeah, and then there are private tennis facilities as well. But thank you for the question. Okay, Chair, welcome the motion.
I have another question.
Okay.
Because I think... And thank you for the work. I know this is really hard because we're playing Tetris, and I know that the funds are going down. And as we mentioned in the previous project, like, things are getting more costly. We're going to have to figure out how to move some money around. So I appreciate how you're playing Tetris. I guess something I'd be interested in knowing is I know we can't do a breakdown, but when we first started the committee, there was a breakdown for costs on different projects, like how much is a splashback going to cost? How much is this going to cost? And so when we came to situations like this where we had to make a decision, it helped us to be able to be like, you know what? We see that there's a soccer field, some soccer fields in Ochoa that are lit, but there's none in Jacobs Park. You know what? What can we do to make sure that, like, we're dispersing these services accordingly. And I feel like right now I'm being asked to approve on something that it's not really that concrete, or I feel like we're missing, like there's still opportunity to move things around. That's just how I feel based on what we're looking at current and post.
Can you go back up to the bond list, what the bond called for?
Yeah.
I just want to be kind of clearer to that.
Thank you.
So there was the call to add new LED lights on two of the existing multi-purpose fields. Mm-hmm. Is that still happening, or were, because those are the lights that currently are working? Just want to make sure I'm tracking.
No, the existing working lights are on the Ochoa side.
On the Ochoa side. So that's the upgrading of the lights on soccer G, H, and I
for
LED. Yeah.
Got it. So that means there still wouldn't be...
So they are lit currently, and recently we had our electrician go out and actually worked with a vendor and confirmed that we don't know how that recommendation really got on the list, but they're functional
for Jacobs, sorry,
for Ochoa, for the Ochoa side. And so basically when we came together and started talking through, here are different options to try and deliver more, because again, we think we're going to really to do everything would be about 12.
Right.
We're in the realm of 8.
Mm-hmm.
So Greg, to his credit, said, well, if we have functional lights at Ochoa that we think are still going to function for 5 to 10 years, then why would we not try to light something else or do something else on the Jacob side?
Excellent.
So that's how that recommendation really came through.
Got it. Because here it says that the 5 unlit soccer fields are still going to remain. So that's is that different than what you're saying?
But the So to be clear, wait, go back.
Sorry.
Because I always like to, when it comes to the 407 projects, I like to look at what it is that we, and exactly like you said, what we said we were going to deliver. The five new soccer fields really are not on this list, right? They're coming out of a master plan process. Actually, the original iteration, I believe, had big soccer fields. And then based on the feedback from the sports user groups, they said, hey, 7-on-7, I think that's what they're called, are really more valuable to us for the little kids who tend to play earlier in the day, right? So I know that it seems like, okay, why can't we light everything? But the other thing that we were considering too is if we're doing a clover softball league,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. If we can't light that, then we're also limiting the use of that for tournaments. And are all four getting lights? Or no, two?
Two, and then two would be an alternate.
Right, and two would be an alternate.
Okay.
So building that capacity in as well.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Right. I don't know if that helps to clarify, but like going, and I know it's hard with this project because we have so many sources of money, right? But in terms of what this board is responsible for approving, we have to always come back to what is the actual, what's actually on the 407 list. And then what we're recommending to kind of help us to pivot and then align to what that survey feedback that we got.
Got it. And the five extra soccer fields came after the master plan.
Right.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
John?
Just one final thought before we move to
sure.
a long night. One recommendation that I might offer up for those fields that are not lit is in the base bid to go ahead and include, and if you do consider future funding becomes available to light them, it makes sense to me to go ahead and install the conduit and the pull boxes now for that sort of thing rather than worry about digging up irrigation later.
Yes, good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, lighting. Very good.
It's not free, but it's a lot less than.
No.
It's a good landscape architect consideration for sure. Yeah.
Follow-up question to John. Is there irrigation in both these parks?
So, yes, and interestingly enough, the ARPA funding that we attributed, so we, when ARPA first came around, part of our project focuses, one was irrigation, one was enhanced recreation. So as soon as we saw the irrigation, what we did is we attributed the money to Jacobs and to a couple other 407 projects so that the 407 money could go further on actual recreation improvements and not the stuff that no one sees underground, which is the irrigation. Mm-hmm. So, because it's hard for folks to find value in that unless you're really closely connected.
Sure.
So I can't remember how much of the ARPA was irrigation-based, but this park, Barinapal, Santa Rita, we're looking at all that for ARPA irrigation funding.
Would it be possible, because I do know we're still trying to plant more trees, And an issue we've had years ago when I was really pushing to plant more trees just because we need shade. And if we want people outside, we need them to have that safety. A lot of the reason that why the city said that we can't plant trees is because there's no irrigation.
Right.
So I'm wondering if it's possible to ask staff and maybe mayor and council, because I know they have the Million Tree Initiative. I know there's other funding. We could maybe partner those up and also make, you know, because I know in Greenways we have not spent very much money.
So just a little side note. So when we, again, got money for irrigation for ARPA,
mm-hmm.
I worked with the urban forest, our urban forester, Nicole Gislett,
mm-hmm.
and we attributed $1.2 million towards irrigation for the purpose of planting trees. And the first four parks are in progress right now, whether it's design or installation, and I can't remember them off the top of my head. But what I found out this week is that there's still capacity to do more. So we have made an effort to that through that funding source.
Excellent.
That's great. That's great news.
Thank you.
Okay.
Approve the proposed changes.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion on the motion.
Okay. I'm sorry. Write it down. Okay. I'm sorry. Who first?
It was.
Yep. Roll call.
Chairman Ron Spark?
Favor.
Don Anderson?
Favor.
Ryan Anderson?
Favor. In favor, yes.
Willie Pike?
Yes.
Nicole Fides has left. Happy Krishna?
Yes, in favor.
Kendall Croson?
Yes.
Jose Munoz?
Yes, in favor.
Mr. Romero-Cardenas? Point to know, if it's possible for staff to provide us an update just with what you guys learned from the post-construction inventory and just with the suggestions that the committee made, and also if we could receive an update on funding for potential shade structures and tree planting in regards to the irrigation. And with that, yes. And I'm sorry, Lisa Vega.
Yes, in favor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It looks like the motion passes.
Okay. Thank you for the work, and thank you for staff.
We look
forward to more of Jacob's Park in the future. That'd be great. Okay. Next meeting is scheduled for October 21st. Question of future agenda items. There were communications we got, and one of them was from Frank Frisch, I believe, and it had to do with Fort Lowell Park expenditures. Another one, maybe you were mentioning San Joaquin Park, or somebody mentioned San Joaquin.
Joaquin Marietta.
And so I would like to bring those back as two agenda items for the next meeting.
It sure feel like it's snowing outside.
I was thinking maybe one of those polar bears would join us.
Never mind.
Are there any other items the commission would like for a future agenda?
I would like to hear back from the transportation staff, Colin, Sam, and the other gentlemen, just to see what kind of information they got on the speed bumps and the timeline for the evaluation on the speed.
Speed study.
Thank you. Okay. Yes.
Yes. Okay. And then I'm just sort of curious about re-engineering speed tables. That got my curiosity because, you know, that's like a 20th century concept, and we're way into the first quarter of the 21st century. So maybe there is something new from an engineering standpoint or from the national organizations.
I'll ask Siri, maybe.
Are there any announcements from the staff or commission? I'm going to announce that I'm going to take my bride out for a very late dinner.
Oh.
All right, a call for adjournment.
Call for adjournment.
Yeah.
Do we need a vote on this?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
Second, we're adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Good work there.
We want to list your question there to be addressed.
I'm sorry.
I said a list of
questions. Yes.
I have a question for my ladies.
May it work.